This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Vedicheski.
This is the Inch Podcast, recorded April 3rd, 2011. I am Joe Gladyszewski. The Inch Podcast is presented by the 2011 NCAA Frozen Four.
Dreams are forged. Character is tested. Teams are united. Champions win here. Watch the crowning of a new NCAA Men's Frozen Four champion April 7th and 9th on ESPN and ESPN2 in high definition. For information, visit ncaa.com/frozen4.
All right. Happy Frozen Four week, everyone. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, ECAC Hockey Senior Writer, Inch Podcast host. And pleased to be joined by our regular podcast panel tonight, starting with Inch editor, columnist, guru, Mike Eidelbus. Hi, Bus.
What's up, peeps?
Not much. Happy Frozen Four week to you.
Yep, let's get this started. I'm ready.
All right. Also want to bring in our CCHA senior writer and University of Michigan graduate for full disclosure, James V. Dowd. Hi, James.
Says Frozen Four, what's that? I'm just paying attention to Michigan Wolverine Lion Kim playing at the Masters this week.
Well, there will be a day when the Frozen Four will be without Gladdy, because I'll be at the Masters after I win the mid-AM. And WCHA senior writer and University of Minnesota Duluth graduate, Jess Myers. Hi, Jess.
Hey, and I absolutely agree with you. Best week of the year, Frozen Four week. This is going to be fun.
Should be a good one. The matchups, if you're listening to the Inch Podcast, you already know this, but we'll set them Minnesota and Duluth.
And if you're not, it doesn't matter.
That's true. Minnesota Duluth versus Notre Dame in the early semifinal Thursday, and the second semifinal, Michigan versus North Dakota. Of course, these games will be played at the Xcel Energy Center in St. Paul, Minnesota, site of the 2002 Frozen Four, as well as the site of at least 11 NHL goals this year by the Minnesota Wild.
Many of them non-shootout goals.
Yeah, some of them.
Site of a Central Division championship for the Detroit Red Wings today, if I'm not mistaken.
That game was at the Joe, actually.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yep.
So you are mistaken.
I am mistaken.
All right, let's get right to these matchups for this week. And we'll start with the early game, Minnesota Duluth and Notre Dame. And I kind of want to throw something out there just before we talk about either of these matchups. And we'll come back to this later in the podcast, but it's a one-game deal. You know, you could get anything here. You can get 5-1 either way. You could get double overtime, triple overtime. You don't know. But, Jess, what did you see from Minnesota Duluth at the Bridgeport Regional? I mean, from what I had read and heard and what you told me, I think it was Minnesota Duluth's best weekend in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. What I saw, and, you know, it's funny the way these things work out. If you go back a few years, you know, when Denver won its first NCAA title, at least in the last, you know, in recent memory, you know, that was the year that the Pioneers got knocked out in the first round of the WCHA playoffs. They had a week off. Then they got to play close to home. And, you know, the cards kind of aligned for them. And I think I saw a little bit of that this year with the Bulldogs getting to St. Paul. You know, they got knocked out in the first game of the WCHA Final Five, after playing a multi-overtime game against St. Cloud State just to get there. You know, they get beat in overtime by Bemidji State. So instead of playing, you know, one or potentially two more games, they go home, they rest up. They got a relatively favorable draw, I will say. They had to travel a long way, but it's a charter plane. And, you know, friends of mine who were on that plane said, you know, every seat's like first class. So it's comfortable travel, and they got, I think, a decent draw in getting to play Union and then getting to play Yale. Both of them were very good teams. But, and you know, if you listen to our podcast, the one thing I talked about going into that regional was I didn't think UMD had the goaltending to go that deep. I thought they would have to outscore teams and play kind of gritty hockey to win. And they got two wins by doing what they do best, which is scoring goals and moving the puck. And then they got great goaltending, which was the surprise. Kenny Ryder played better than I've seen him play all year.
Yeah, I think that was especially true in the first period against Union, when Union really came out with a lot of jump. Ryder made some big stops at that time and gave his team a chance to get those two power play goals and a 2-0 win.
The penalty kill was huge, too. I mean, we heard all year about Union's power play and about Yale's power play. And for all intents and purposes, they were, shut down until the third period of that Yale game when the other Bulldogs got a couple goals to make it close with a man advantage. But special teams were very important in these games. And then, that top line did what that top line does, which is, get early leads and control the play make other teams' defensemen look foolish from time to time.
Now, James, I know you were at the St. Louis Regional and probably didn't get to see a lot of the Notre Dame contest, so maybe I'll pull Bus in on this as well. But watching all the games from here in the bunker, the inch Ithaca, New York bunker.
World Headquarters East?
Yeah, the Inch Bureau East. It seemed to me that if I had to describe Notre Dame's weekend, it was just finding a way. Bus, your take on that?
Yeah, I think that that's a great assessment, is finding the way and really just not giving up. They did not come out very strong, actually, in either game. They kind of came out a little slow. But the one thing I like about this team, being Notre Dame, I like their depth. I think they've got great depth. They're real young, but they haven't really showed that. At least they didn't in the regional. And I think that they're a case similar to Duluth, where they got, coming in, their goaltending was a bit of an issue, but Mike Johnson was pretty good in both of those games. And, I think that the one thing I really liked was, not just the depth, but I thought that they were really strong for the most part in their own end on defense. That's forwards and defensemen. And, I know that people kind of give him the short shrift a little bit because he's a first-round NHL draft pick, and I think people expect him to put up more points than he does, but I was really impressed with Riley Sheehan. I thought he was great, especially against New Hampshire. I mean, he's such a defensive presence and has such great size and reach and so much skill that even without getting points on the board, that I think that he can be, he was a difference maker in the regional, and he can be. I would assume you'll see a lot of him matched up with the Connolly Fontaine line on Thursday.
James, did you get a sense, and I know this is going back quite a ways now, but that Notre Dame could put that kind of weekend together after what they did at the Joe and losing two games at the CCHA Mason Cup weekend?
Looking at it at face value, the way they played in that that weekend at the Joe, they really didn't look like a team who could put this weekend together. But thinking back a little bit before that, watching the way they played against Miami, then again they tripped up against Western Michigan the following weekend when they had the CCHA title on the line. They've been a up down and all around kind of team. So the talent's definitely there, as they showed, and I think that what you saw, as Bus mentioned, with Sheehan and then guys like Billy Mayday and Steven Johns, I think, had only a second goal of the year, but he's a high NHL draft pick. Those big names, as well as Anders Lee and TJ Tynan, stepped up and played the game they're capable of playing. And so I think, if anything, my question was, can those guys come out and consistently put together an entire weekend where they play up to their potential? And they did, and when they do that, it's going to be hard for anybody to keep up with them.
Yeah, and Bus, you alluded to it. But Notre Dame got stronger as those games went on, and that's something that they should be able to build on heading into this weekend in St. Paul.
Yeah, no question. I'm glad you brought up Anders Lee, because the goal he scored I think it was against Merrimack.
Yeah, the overtime
From just the one just inside the blue line.
Oh, no, that was the second period goal then, yeah.
I mean, that was a heck of a shot. I mean, that kid's a heck of a player. The other thing that I like about Notre Dame is, and right now, you know, if we had to pick, I think I'd give the slight edge to Notre Dame. I like Jeff Jackson behind the bench. Mm. You know, I think, you know, he's been through this before a lot, you know, and he's won some national championships at Lake State back in the day. And I just like his demeanor.
In St. Paul, as a matter of fact. He's won him in that town before.
Right, 91, I believe. Was it 91?
94. 9-1, 94 over Boston University.
Okay.
I think that was his last title with Lake State, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Yep.
That was a blowout.
Jack, just to digress quickly, Jack Parker with one of the great quotes of all time after the game. They asked him, "Are you mad at your team?" You know, it was like 7-0 heading into the third. They said, "Are you mad at your team?" He said, "No, I had the whole third period to get over it." Anyway.
That's a good point, Buss.
I just like, even when you saw the shots of him on the bench, obviously you can't really observe him 100% of the time when you're at home watching on TV, but, you know, there was never really any panic. I always, you know, he always seemed to have a plan in place. He's just a very calming influence, steady influence, and I think that, even though these guys are young, you look at his resume and you can just say, all right, you guys just go and play. Leave the details to me. I'll tell you what to do, and we'll be prepared to win. You know, whether they win or not, I think that remains to be seen. But obviously, it remains to be seen. But I think he's the kind of coach that will definitely have a game plan in place to really combat Duluth's strengths.
All right, I'm going to send this question out to both Jess and James. I guess we'll start with Jess first. Give me, maybe an A to Z type guy, an under the radar guy that could have a big impact this weekend for Minnesota Duluth.
Well, I really think, a big key for them is going to have to be defense. And, they played so well defensively and goaltending wise in the regional. I would look to, for all the talk about their offense, I think, you're going to see a defenseman step up and be important if they're going to survive that first round game. And, to single out one guy is tough. I mean, Falk is the name everybody knows on that team. Justin Falk, the rookie out of South St. Paul, who was an under 18 team guy and, a prominent guy that way. But, I would almost look to like a Mike Montgomery, who is one of the senior defensemen on that team. And, I think he's a guy that's going to have to excel this weekend if they're going to win a game or two.
Yeah, Perry Melrose loved himself some Mike Montgomery at that regional. James, same question for you regarding Notre Dame.
There's a guy on that roster that I've liked every time I've seen him play this year named Jeff Costello. He's a freshman forward, Ottawa Senators draft pick. His numbers on the year, it's 11 goals, 6 assists in 43 games. They don't stand out a lot, but if I look back over what's given Notre Dame success over the past 3, 4, 5 years as they've risen to prominence with the exception of last year, the difference has been the guys like Ryan Thang and I guess Ben Ryan is still on this team with those big goals at big times where you don't expect it. And you look at those 11 goals this year and you look at the way Costello plays, I think he can really be a difference maker. Because he's a high energy guy who can create space for himself, especially against a defensive team like the Bulldogs.
All right. There you have it. Let's talk about the second semifinal now with Michigan and North Dakota. And start with North Dakota, I guess. Got to be the favorites considered by most heading into this thing. What did you see from them, Buss? Maybe business as usual? at the regional?
Yeah, I think so. You know, they just kind of ended up overwhelming Rensselaer. I mean, Rensselaer was just overmatched.
They were game for 20 minutes, but then it
kind of... Yeah, and it's kind of the same story on Sunday, too, where Denver kind of, you know, gave them a run for about 20 minutes. And then I think it was after, I'm trying to remember this game off the top of my head. After Denver, you know, early in that they score that goal late to tie it at 1-1,
right?
And then Denver got those two back to back power plays early in the second and couldn't score. I mean, that to me, even though it was still a tie game, I mean, that was more or less the you could see the wind come out of Denver's sails a little bit there. And then they just rolled. And, you know, obviously Denver played that 2-OT game against Western Michigan the day before. And once they weren't able to capitalize on that, on those back-to-back power plays early in the second, you know, you could see it took a little bit of their emotion away. And then as that period went on, you could start to see a little bit they started to wear down. But, you know, even if they're healthy, I think North Dakota probably still beats them. You know, they're playing well in basically every phase of the game. You know, even strength, getting a lot of offensive production from different sources. You know, Fratton, for all we talk about him, was not really that big of a factor. I think he only had 2 points the whole weekend, a late goal against Rensselaer and an assist against Denver. You know, Brad Malone was good for them. Nelson had a couple of points. They got a shorthanded goal, I believe, in both games, didn't they? They scored shorty against Rensselaer?
Yes.
So, yeah, shorthanded goal, and obviously Dell was just fine.
So, yeah.
Every phase of their game was right on.
When we last spoke 2 weeks ago, as we record this now on Selection Sunday, you know, we kind of put the spotlight on Dell a little bit, and he didn't disappoint. You know, the Zucker goal was the only one he allowed all weekend, and that was kind of under strange circumstances there in the final second of the first period of the regional final game. But Corbin Knight and Mario Lamoureux, as you said, had shorthanded goals. A lot of guys chipped in. Trupp and Malone were very good. You know, and Fratton's on that line, too, so he's going to make some space for those guys to make plays. But pretty good stuff from North Dakota. And they'll be in good shape. And James, I guess Jess first, anything else on North Dakota from your standpoint?
I'm just amazed by their depth. You know, when you talk about guys like you know, Lamoureux and you know, Malone, and you know, these are not the marquee guys that you hear about. The ability they have to just roll guys and to add on, you know, points late in the game has what's impressed me most. And this really looks like a team that's clicking on all cylinders.
James, a friend of mine, you know, here in town asked me about Michigan, and I said, you know, it's a one-game deal, and when they're at their best, as we saw, I think, twice in St. Louis, or not even at their best, but when they're good, you know, they're good enough to beat anybody in the country. Was that kind of what you saw and heard at St. Louis in that regional?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think they've got some top-tier talent. They've shown it sometimes throughout the season anyway that they can play with just about anybody. And I guess the one thing I really thought made a difference, and I mentioned this in my notebook, and it was something Red Berenson pointed out in the post-game press conference. He talked about how his associate head coach, Mel Peterson, and the video coordinator, his name is L.J. Scarpace, who's a former backup goalie for Michigan back about the turn of the century.
The turn of the century. You kids in your centuries.
I know, look at that. Anyway, but, you know, he talked about the work that they did in the course of 24 hours to prepare for Colorado College, who obviously came out and played a ridiculously good game on Friday night against Boston College. And they did a good job of, you know, putting the short Schwartz and Schultz line into a box. The only power play goal they had was really, for all intents and purposes, a 4-on-4 goal. And, you know, they came out and they were ready. And if they can do that for North Dakota, great. And I think they can compete with them. I just think it's a lot harder to do when you've got four lines that are, you know, that are can score goals and can defend well.
Yeah, that's going to be a big task. I guess we'll go back to that same question. Jess, maybe somebody from North Dakota or Bus, if you want to jump in, one of those unheralded or less heralded guys, I should say, that might have a big weekend in St. Paul.
Jess, I'll throw Corbin Knight out there.
He's A to Z guy.
He is an A to Z guy, and, you know, a sizable guy. He's an NHL draft pick. He's 6'2". I mean, but, you know, he's one of these guys that you don't think of in the same sentence as Gregoire or as Fratton or as even Evan Trump, who's, you know, seems to turn it on for the playoffs every year. But Knight's a guy I would watch out for.
James,
you know, Gladys, something we've talked about too with in terms of North Dakota is Jason Gregoire and how, you know, we Fratton's numbers notwithstanding, you and I both think he's the best player on that team.
I really do think that. Every night I watch them, he's the guy for me.
And I think another name you can't forget about, I mean, there's so many on this team that it's really just unbelievable. Danny Christo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Haven't heard much about him this season. What's he been doing? No, kidding.
Christo, to me, is, you know, and a lot of people know we have some contacts with the Washington Capitals or have had some contacts with the Washington Capitals, but he's the semen to, you know, maybe Fratton's, you know, Ovechkin or Knubel-type status where, you know, the one guy is looked at as the star, but the other guy's talent level, just he'll do something every night that'll blow your mind. And when I see Christo, the closest comparison I can make is when Mike Camilleri was at Michigan. Just that his talent level is so different than everybody else out there that there's some time, you know, I find myself, you know, hitting the rewind button on my DVR when I watch North Dakota an awful lot for number seven. So
I think one thing we have to also think about in the context of Michigan is their health. I know that they've been banged up, and James, I don't know if you have an update or know where they are health wise, but, you know, in the regional, they were down at least a couple guys.
Yeah, they were. David Wahlberg is out for the year. He won't play this weekend during the first round, well, I guess the second round of the CCHA playoffs against Bowling Green. He broke a collarbone and I think, you know, some other injuries in and around, upper body injuries, and just, you know, is in a sling and a cast and doesn't look anything like he's going to be ready, and Red said he's out for the year. Brandon Berlin, however, sat out the regional. I think we talked about that back on the last podcast. He had strep throat and then an allergic reaction to the medication for strep throat. Kind of got a bad bounce there, but he has reportedly been back at practice and looking pretty good this week. We'll see if, you know, I heard that he had lost 15 to 20 pounds. That's a lot of weight, and, you know, that's a lot to make up in the course of 2 weeks. But if he can come back in and be anything like what Brandon Berlin typically is, that adds a lot for Michigan when they're trying to compete with some of the top players from North Dakota.
If Berlin is back, who does that bump? Claire Patterin?
Claire, I would imagine. It could be Patterin, but, you know, Kevin Claire did.
Claire was, I thought, pretty good in St. Louis.
Yeah, there were times that it was kind of, you know, you held your breath a little bit, maybe. But he, that was something I paid attention to pretty closely just to see, you know, whether he could compete. But I thought he did a serviceable job as a fifth or sixth defenseman out there for a guy who's only played in 16 games this year.
Yeah. When I think about that Michigan CC game, the word that comes to mind is suffocating. I mean, Michigan was so good those first two periods. You know, they built a lead. They had a huge shot margin advantage. You know, that even includes killing the first three penalties of the game in that first period. some of which overlapped and were 5-on-3 situations. So
you laugh, though. They play that kind of game with two of their three New Jersey Devils draft picks out of the lineup.
Yeah. And boom.
You know, we
need a rim shot sound effect.
Since we're talking about penalty kills, I complimented UMD earlier.
Yes.
That was the one thing that really struck me about North Dakota's game with Denver. You know, because you alluded to the fact that Denver gets that goal late in the first period and ties the game. And then right early in the second, Denver goes on the power play, I think twice, like back-to-back.
Yeah.
And if there was an opportunity for the Pioneers to take over that game, that was it. And North Dakota's penalty kill, not only did they not score, I mean, they didn't get a sniff. They were completely shut down. And that was the game for all intents and purposes. And the Sioux scored a couple, and, you know, good night. Drive safely.
Yeah, there you go. James, let's grab the, to make it a complete set here, Dark Horse guy for Michigan at the Frozen Four.
If you can call him this after he's already had 13 goals this year, I think Scooter Vaughn is a guy who can really make a difference. He had just an excellent goal to begin the game against Colorado College where, walked around a defenseman, had a nice finish, and he kind of went, huh? Wait, what, Scooter? You did that? But if he can put together that kind of game and be a difference maker offensively, that'll take some of the load off of guys like Hagelin and Caparuso and, maybe replace the impact that a guy like Wahlberg would have had and give the opportunity for somebody like Kevin Lynch, but I think Scooter Vaughn can really be an X factor for Michigan.
There you go. All right, so those are the four teams that are still playing for the trophy. For the other 54 teams and their fans, the Frozen Four kind of turns into a celebration of the sport, so to speak. And the college hockey community, will certainly be tuned in as the four teams vie for championship. I guess we'll go around the horn right here, and I'll start with Bus, and then go to James, and then Jess, and then I'll kind of wrap up, I guess, with any other thoughts that might have stood out from the regionals?
Wow. Well, I heard something interesting on the radio. I was listening to a sports talk show. And this was in context with the NCAA basketball tournament. But the host was making a point about how when you're looking at the NCAA basketball tournament, how you don't really focus on those round of 16 games because you're 2 days later, those teams are, the winners are turning around to play for the right to go to the Frozen Four. And his point was, you forget how, Arizona dismantled Duke I believe it was the West Regional. And I started thinking about that in the context of hockey with the quick turnaround that there is. I started wondering if hockey fans really appreciate the job that CC did against Boston College or what UNH did against Miami in those opening round games. It just turned out that both of those teams would end up losing the following day. But those were, especially if you saw that CC Boston College game, that was, if you saw the first period, and I guess part of the second period or the second period too, there are times where you're literally rubbing your eyes because you couldn't believe what you were seeing. It was, it was an absolute domination. And then those teams, same thing with UNH and Miami. And I think those kind of get lost in the shuffle a little bit just because those teams turn around and play for the right to go to the Frozen Four the next day. But those were, especially the Colorado College-Boston College game. That was that doesn't happen in Boston College very often.
That's the one that stands out.
You don't see them get completely dominated like that.
Yeah, that's definitely the one that stands out. James, you were there. What was the vibe in the building and among, I guess, members of the media that you would have been sitting with during that and after that performance from CC?
I think exactly what Bus said, just kind of rub your eyes, jaw drop, shock. I mean, they came out and just completely ran Boston College out of the building. And, you know, we were all chatting online and, you know, updating each other on what went on. And you saw Boston College score 19 seconds in. I think we were all kind of, here we go.
Here they go again, yes.
That's that. But then, you know, 4 minutes later and they're, you know, CC ties the game. They get a couple shorthanded goals from, you know, from guys. And just watching what they did, I mean, it was really, it was a kind of effort that would make you a hockey fan if you hadn't watched it before. And, you know, the thing that really stuck with me from the weekend, sure, they came out and Michigan did a good job shutting them down the next night, but barring pro signings and things like that, they don't lose a whole lot. Going into next year. And so the biggest thing that stuck with me, I watched the way that Joe Howe reacted to losing on Saturday night. I, you know, watched the way that they kind of took that loss. I don't want to make it sound like they were at peace with it, because they weren't, but, you know, that they were able to put it into perspective, you know, makes me think that this is a team that we should definitely keep our eye on for next year.
Yeah, there you go. Jess, anything you saw out there?
Well, that one obviously stands out for me. Miami bowing out the way they did really stood out for me as well. Just, I think we all expected a lot more from them. Just, we'd gotten kind of used to seeing the Redhawks in the Frozen Four the last few years. So that one jumped out at me. But no, it's funny because I think James and I talked a little bit about the CC Boston College game. And I thought the same thing you did. If you guys remember on the podcast, CC was my upset pick. I thought, you know, I the Tigers would get to the Frozen Four. Well, 19 seconds in, I'm thinking, okay, well, shot in the dark, I missed, you know, no big deal. But to see them play the way they did and to see Jaden Schwartz put on the show he did in what he hopes will be his workplace in a few years in St. Louis was a neat way, you know, for them to cap their season. You have to wonder what CC might have been like in the second half of the WCHA season if Schwartz had been healthy.
Good point.
Yep.
Good point.
But you know, something else that sticks out to me from that team, when you talked about North Dakota and depth and guys in the third and fourth line, CC's got that.
Yep.
So.
And yeah, Joe Howe, I mean. Yeah, and Joe Howe, you know, credit to him for rallying in the second half of the season after, you know, there was a time in January and February where we weren't even sure that the job was his in goal for the Tigers, and he played very well also.
Yeah, I think when you touched on, you know, the Miami loss and the Boston College loss, it kind of brings me to the umbrella perspective that I wanted to make. And, you know, and I kind of mentioned at the top, these one-game deals are so unique, you know, and people, you see so much and you read so much and hear so much about how this conference is this and this conference is that, you know. Well, yeah, BC got blown out by CC. Does that mean that all of Hockey East is terrible? Does that mean that Boston College didn't have, you know, 30-something wins this year? No, you know, it's one night, and I would caution people not to. You know, we got chat questions like this too in our latest ESPN chat, but, you know, look at it for what it is and keep things in perspective that, you know, every game is one game and every team is one team. So that's all I want to say about that.
I think that applies to the ECAC the most. I heard a lot of people knocking the ECAC this weekend, you know, with maybe Yale falling earlier than people had thought and Union going out early, and I heard a lot of people saying, oh, ECAC, ha, 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 like, they're no good, whatever. And I just don't think that's the case at all. And I guess I just want to be on the record saying that I still think they play some pretty good hockey out there.
I mean, I see that league the most. You know, and you know, you watch the Union-Duluth game, and it's two power play goals. And Ryder plays maybe his best game of the season, Jess. I don't know. Is it?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Is that fair?
You know, it's funny you say that because, you know, the WCHA fans get accused of arrogance, whatever. I had to spend the week before the regional. No,
Hold on a second here.
I had to spend the week before the regional. You know, getting emails from all these friends of mine who are Bulldog fans saying, oh, man, we got a cakewalk into the Frozen Four. We get, you know, probably two ECAC teams. It's going to be a pushover. And I spent all week saying, careful what you wish for, because Union is really good and they have this great power play, and Yale, you know, same way. So, you know, if you think it's going to be a cakewalk, wake up. And it certainly wasn't a cakewalk, but now I almost look like an idiot on the other side, because it's like, you know, all these people are saying to me, well, I told you we'd take out those two teams. We, of course.
Of course.
so, you know, I hate it when stereotypes get reinforced, but for a lot of WCHA fans who don't see the ECAC, this is a reinforcement of what they already thought, which is too bad.
Well,
because I think those were two very good hockey teams.
And they watch one weekend a year.
Right.
You know, that's it.
And since we're talking about that regional, I got to give a shout out to Air Force too. Man, does that team work hard! And
oh man, yeah, they play hard.
Gave Yale all they can handle. If you watch that game, and especially if you watch the overtime, for the first, you know, 3 minutes of overtime, you're thinking Air Force is going to end this any second.
Yeah,
they were dominating play. They were controlling the puck. You know, Yale's goalie is standing on his head, and then all of a sudden, one rush and it's over. And they show the Air Force bench, and Frank Sertori is there, and just like, oh, okay, we tried.
Yeah.
But, man, does that team work hard.
Yeah, they're good. New Hampshire kind of fits that mold, you know, the one-game thing, you know, that we talked about with CC. You know, and in the end, you know, maybe they're the one team, I'd say North Dakota and New Hampshire that, you know, in this tournament kind of proved their season. You know, North Dakota proving it in the sense that they've been the best team in the regular season or one of the best teams and took care of business. But also New Hampshire in the sense that they're pretty good and they could beat anybody, but they're not really quite there yet, you know, or this year. This wasn't really their time or their situation. So I think the win over Miami was, you know, was part of it. And then the game against Notre Dame was another thing.
You know, one thing that I think we kind of maybe glossed over when we were looking at the regionals about, you know, New Hampshire, obviously a lot of people caught on to the fact that they were the host there and playing very close to home, which, you know, I don't know how much of an advantage that was, and I'm sure it was a little advantage for them. But the other thing is it's not like they're not familiar with Miami. UNH has played them at least four times in the last 2 years. With the game in the regional being the fifth. So they, I mean, you know, they knew what Miami was all about. It wasn't going to be a surprise to them. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't going to be anything that they hadn't seen before. I mean, and I think that plays a big role when you're coming in into one of those one and done games. And obviously UNH has had success against Miami in the recent past. You know, and they knew what they had to do to win, and they knew they could win.
And you know what? I don't think Miami really suffered a whole lot. It's not, well, maybe New Hampshire got a boost from their fans, but Miami, you know, was in Fort Wayne last year and nobody showed up. They play in Detroit almost every year and nobody shows up there. And so, you know, if they played in Pittsburgh, if they played anywhere other than Cincinnati or Oxford, I don't know that their fans would have turned out anyway. So I think that that's really not an adequate gripe for them like it might be for, you know, a Michigan, a Minnesota, a North Dakota.
Well, why would anybody leave Oxford to go watch a silly hockey game?
Exactly.
Denver and North Dakota probably, you know, travel worse than anybody in the WCHA, and they don't seem to suffer too much from
North Dakota.
Denver and CC, not North Dakota. It's,
I was going to say.
Yeah, boy, that was a slip up. Because if you're in St. Paul, you're going to see a sea of green, believe me.
I was going to say there were as many North Dakota jerseys in St. Louis as there were a CC one.
Were they confused? Did they not read the bracket, right?
No, they were cheering for their league.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Actually, it was weird. It was TJ Oshie. He was in this crowd. He was supposed to be at practice.
He was sleeping in the seats.
Weird, awkward.
Yeah, I do look forward to watching WCHA games on TV next year and hearing the home crowd cheer for every goal that's scored, whether the home or away team is scoring it, because
yeah,
it's by a WCHA team.
Cheer for your league.
So. Well, I know we don't like to talk about crowd size and all that, but man, if you don't have tickets for the Frozen Four and you're hoping to come to town just to pick up a couple, good luck. This is the toughest ticket I have ever seen for college hockey.
Bring a fat wallet.
Yeah. There will be tickets available on the street, but they are not going to be cheap. It's just crazy. I mean, you've got two teams, obviously, that are within driving distance and that have a lot of alumni in the Twin Cities. And then, you know, there's a sizable Notre Dame alumni club in the Twin Cities. A couple friends of mine belong to it. They've got a good showing there, and there are Michigan fans everywhere. So this one is in high demand.
There are Michigan fans everywhere.
That is true.
That Fab Five documentary brought them all out of the woodwork again. Oh, I remember them. They had the baggy shorts.
Don't let them drive you home, though.
We'll deteriorate on Fab Five maybe a little later. But let's talk about another storyline that is ongoing and will culminate on Friday. Hobie Hattrick is announced. No surprises there. Matt Fratton, Andy Mealy, Cam Atkinson. Three guys, all tremendous seasons, all worthy award winners, all have a unique candidacy, I think. What's your gut feeling right now, Mike, on how this is? Who's Mike? Bus.
Exactly. I was thinking the same thing.
On Mike's how this might this
podcast.
How this might shake down.
Yeah. It's a good question.
We presented, you know, the pros and cons of each of those candidacies in our Hobie Tracker last week.
Right.
Just briefly recap some of those.
Well, I think that the thing that you look at, go in alphabetical order. We'll start with Atkinson. You know, his consistency. 26 points in the first half of the season, 26 points in the second half of the season. He had one scoring streak of, or one scoreless stretch of two games. And other than that, he was not held scoreless in consecutive games all season. I think the issue with him, there are a couple. You know, first of all, BC gets dumped by CC early in the, you know, in the first round of the regional. And I know that shouldn't really play a role, but you can't help but think that it's in the back of some people's minds. The other one is that you know, as good as he was, he wasn't the player of the year in Hockey East.
Right.
That, you know, that went to Paul Thompson. Whether that was right or not, I don't know, because there were some pretty sketchy vote tallies out there in Hockey East.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, you know, I think that, you know, that's something that voters will definitely take into account. Fratton got the most goals. Leading scorer on the best team. He's coming into this weekend. Well, the votes were cast last week, actually. He's on a roll.
Yeah, let me interrupt there. For those who aren't familiar with the process, the list of 10 finalists is announced before the regionals, and then a day or two after the regionals, there's a conference call to evaluate the 10 Hobie finalists, and you're asked to vote for the top five in order, ranking them 1 through 5. Mm-hmm. Of those 10 finalists. You can't go off the board on that vote, you know, just because you maybe had a guy in mind. You know, say, I don't know, Stefan DaCosta, who didn't make the top 10, you can't put him on your top 5 list, you know, after that 10 is done. But that vote comes after a conference call after the regionals. So the votes are in. There's no changing any minds right now.
And the three that you see are the three top vote getters.
Yes.
You know, and maybe we should save Fratton for last because, you know, why I guess we've been down that road a few times.
Oh, yeah.
I think the one argument that you can make, and we made it in our Hobie Tracker for the final three, you know, he might not even be the most valuable player on their team. And that might be Arundel.
Oh, yeah.
Because where are they without him coming in and playing?
Inch goaltender of the year. Yeah.
Not just adequate, but well. Mealy.
Nation's leading point scorer.
He's nation's leading point scorer, and I want to come back to that. You know, he, you know, a little bit like Atkinson, didn't play well against New Hampshire in that regional, first round regional game. He's also got the issue of playing with another finalist in Carter Camper and Riley Smith, who very well could have been a finalist. What he has going for him, this is really what stood out in doing a little bit of research. He's got 71 points, and that's the most by a college player since 2002-2003, when Peter Senia had 82, and obviously he won the Hobie that year, and Chris Kunitz, who's done pretty well for himself since leaving Ferris State, he had 79 that year. That's pretty impressive. And, you know, Mealy, down the stretch prior to that UNH game, was really unbelievable. He had 17-game point streak, 14 goals, 24 assists.
You know, you brought up the point of him playing with Smith and Camper, and I do want to point out that Camper was on a different line. They played on the power play together. And I think if you look at the jump that Riley Smith made from his freshman year to his sophomore year, good bloodlines. We saw what his older brother did. But I think a lot of that was a product of having Mealy set him up. I mean, he had a lot of – granted, you got to finish him. You got to put the puck in the net. But he had a lot of, backside, tap-ins and, some really, really nice setups coming from Mealy. And so I would actually argue that Smith's success should be a boon to Mealy, because I think his success was heavily predicated on Mealy getting him the puck this year.
That's a good point. All right, let's do the inch thing here and look at things in a little different light. If you're drafting a team, we'll go right around the horn here again. Which one of those guys do you take first, Buzz?
If I'm drafting a team and I have to take one of them first, my gut tells me to take Atkinson first.
All right. Jess?
I think he's the most talented.
Jess?
I think Atkinson's the most talented. I would take Mealy, and I know that'll enrage North Dakota fans who are listening, and I'm okay with that.
Here's
what I'll say about Fratton. The guy is an amazing finisher, and I saw that again and again. You know, we saw it in the WCHA Final Five. We saw it in the regional. But you need somebody to get him the puck. And I think I'd want somebody like Mealy in that role.
Well, for an amazing finisher, he was 1-for-5 on breakaways in the regional.
Well, there is that.
Doubt?
I got to go with Mealy too. Maybe. Admittedly, I haven't seen enough of Atkinson or Fratton, and I've seen a lot of Mealy. But like Jess said, he gets the puck to people, and when it's his turn, he finishes it. So, and he's been a good leader and a good influence on that locker room as well. So,
you know, the other thing too, I think you can throw in with Mealy, and we say this all the time about the Miami guys, but you know, he's going to be a two-way player.
Yeah.
Because those guys don't get to play they don't see the ice if they're not responsible in their own end.
I'll cast a vote for Fratton for some sake of balance, but also for this point, I think his body will hold up better than the other two. I was impressed by his strength and his skating. He's a pretty big guy that
he is rock solid.
He doesn't get pushed off the puck real easy. And that I liked about his game as I watched it more closely throughout the season. So that element to me would stand up at the next level a little more. And I thought the same of Paul Thompson too. I thought he's a good player. He's a good player. So there you go.
So I guess the bottom line, who do you think is going to win the Hobie? we probably shouldn't avoid that discussion.
I think Mealy will win it.
Jess, we won't make you divulge.
Yeah, Jess Myers is a voter.
So. I'm a Hobie voter, so I'll exclude myself from this conversation.
Okay.
Go to the soundproof booth.
Yeah.
The cones of silence.
We'll play some Muzak, and you can wait in the soundproof booth while we conduct the first round of...
No, I just think in fairness, I mean...
No, that's fine. That's fine.
No, it's...
And hey, you guys have been down that road. It's a great honor to be a voter for the Hobie, and I take it very seriously. So, yes.
That's all we need to know.
Yeah. For the other people, we can say this. For those who don't know, you're on the Hobie voting committee for a term of 3 years. You're not excluded, you know, once you're off of it, but Bus has served 3 years. I have done 3 years as a Hobie voter. And Jess's second term, Jess?
I just, when I sent in that ballot, that completed my second term. So I'll be there next year as well.
Has been concluded. So, no, your second year.
Second year.
Of your second term.
Of my first term.
First term. You've never voted on this before?
Never voted before.
Oh, wow.
I was actually the media relations director.
Yeah, you were in charge of the thing. You didn't have to vote.
2 years back in the...
You could rig it however you wanted.
I wrote the press release for Brian Holzinger.
He's a good player.
He was a good guy.
Yeah. Who was it, Bus, that I was singing that looked just like Holzinger?
Jeez, I can't remember now. You sent me the picture.
Yeah.
Somebody out east.
Yeah, it was. Oh, it was Adam Prasiznik of Union.
Yeah.
It was identical. Hope Holzinger passed his ID along.
He could just make a fake one and cut his picture out of an old book.
I'm a Hobie Baker winner and Buffalo Sabre star Brian Holzinger.
Come on in. Why didn't you say so? So wait. You picked Mealy.
I think Mealy will win.
Yes.
That's different than how would you have voted.
Yes, you're right.
I think Mealy will win.
I think Mealy will win also.
James?
I think Mealy would win, and I think I would also have voted for Mealy if I were to have a vote.
Right. I think I would have voted for him as well.
All right.
And I'm not driving to St. Paul, so I don't have to worry about my tires getting slashed.
Are you sure?
Am I sure?
They'll go to your house. They'll go to your house.
They might. next thing you know, some North Dakota fan knocks on my door and
517
kicks my dog.
Hey, I'm a big Jonathan Toews fan. Does that give me points?
Sure.
Yeah, I think everybody's a Jonathan Toews fan.
He is a good player.
Since we're on this topic, though, I got to say this in all seriousness to any fans that are listening, not just fans of one particular team. If you're at the Hobie ceremony Friday night,
yes,
and the guy you want to win it desperately does not, if you boo the guy who does win it, I'm done. I'm through. I mean, just show some class. That's all I'm saying. And I'm not singling out fans of any one particular team here. But if your guy doesn't win, show some class and applaud the guy who does. That's all.
And as we mentioned, you know, briefly on the podcast and in the Hobie Tracker, each of these guys has a legitimate claim and a legitimate candidacy. There's no wrong choice here. They're all good.
No, there really isn't.
They're all really good and deserving.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with any of these guys winning. I really wouldn't.
Right. Exactly.
You know, I think Atkinson's probably the third guy.
Yeah, he seems to be that right now.
But even if he wasn't, you know.
How close would this be if BC had advanced out of that region? Can you imagine?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, the other problem that I have, well, not problem, but the thing that may have hindered Atkinson or may hinder him because I'm not sure what tense we're speaking in because the votes have already been cast.
Right, right.
But they're so darn deep.
BC. You know,
BC. With a lot of...
Also is North Dakota.
Yeah, but a lot of similar players to Atkinson. Maybe not quite as talented, but, you know, you see a lot of guys with
similar... They come in shapes and sizes that are a little different.
Yeah.
When you look at Hayes and Kreider specifically. But, yeah, they've got... I mean, every team that's an elite team and, you know...
I guess you can pretty much say it about all three of these guys, though, so...
Yeah, we wrote...
Never mind that. We'll edit that out in post.
I think we've used that phrase on the podcast now 100 times.
That's all right.
We've never we don't have post podcast editing, as our listeners are very well aware.
I'm gonna keep saying it till it finally happens.
All right.
Our podcast intern Amos, he keeps forgetting to do that.
Yeah. I've got him. Did you say Amos or Angus?
Amos.
Okay.
Amos. Famous Amos.
Famous Amos.
That's right.
I've got him logging tapes right now, actually.
Podcast, yes.
We were going to let him be on the show one of these times, but he started ranting about our IT, and we can't have that.
He started talking about...
He started talking about how great it was at Ford Field last year.
Okay. He wanted people to look at his crotch, and I don't know what that means.
Wow.
Can
you say crotch on a podcast?
Oh, yes, you can.
Kick him in the crotch.
Wow.
When is the statute of limitations when we can just openly opine on last year's Frozen Four?
Oh, that expired the day we left town.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, that does the checklist, guys, on what we wanted to get to. Ready to deteriorate or any other college hockey relevant news? Boss, you want to...
Yeah, I got one, actually. I had about three thoughts going on at the same time.
All right.
One was, first of all, I don't know if you wanted to mention the best place in Minneapolis, the Twin Cities metro area, to hang out after the games or during the games.
Yeah, we can mention that.
All right, go ahead.
All right. The kind of unofficial sponsor, but an official friend of college hockey, and Jim Rosvold meant many in the Western hockey community, Western part of the country, not Western Michigan. No Jim, and his fine establishment in Stadium Village in Minneapolis, Campus Pizza, will be the Inch post-game headquarters. We'll be hanging out there when we our staff will be in full force at the Frozen Four. Find us on Facebook. Invite us to your tailgates. You can dump beers on us in person rather than via email. So we'll be out and about. Looking forward to that as we descend on the Twin Cities later this week.
I actually bought a house 10 minutes from the rink. I'm that excited for this for this Frozen Four.
Jess has already descended. Campus Pizza is a place to be. Great great food, great drinks, great atmosphere.
Like great pizza.
Yeah.
Have the spicy special. You won't regret it.
That's what she said.
Oh man, wow.
All right. What was your other one, Bus? You said you had three things going on.
I forgot one. there is one more, but I'm gonna have you. I think you have the background on it. Actually, tuned in last night to Hockey Night in Canada. Was watching Toronto and Ottawa, and was somewhat surprised to see the aforementioned Stefan DaCosta in uniform for the Sens. He played last night.
Good for him.
And to make him on the roster, they optioned Colin Greening back to Binghamton.
Yeah, after he scored two goals.
Two goals. Get on the bus.
Exactly. Not the greatest. But yeah, good to see him.
There was a lot of talk in Minnesota that he was going to sign with the Wild, and that was one of the teams he was considering. Then he signs with Ottawa. I thought, what are the odds that a guy from France picks a team where they're bilingual for the most part?
Yeah. And he can score goals, so why was Minnesota interested?
Yeah.
Exactly.
He's the sixth native of France to play in the NHL.
Really?
Yes.
Chris Huet is one.
I was going to say, let's hope he has a better career than Huet.
Felipe Bozon.
Okay.
Is one. Yeah. I don't know who the other three are.
Yeah, we'll have to.
Probably some dude back in the day that was born in France and then moved to Quebec.
Yeah. So. All right.
On that same hockey night note, tuned into Edmonton, Vancouver last night for a little bit.
Edmonton's got some young talent.
Edmonton has got every college guy who's ever played hockey on their team, for crying out loud.
I saw the Oil play a couple nights ago. Chris Vandevelde in uniform.
There was a shot in the third period, I believe. They were killing a penalty, and there was a scramble in the net mouth, and you see. Was it Petrie, Vandevelde, and who was the other guy? I can't remember now, but just looking at him saying...
Not Tom Gilbert.
College, yeah.
Ryan Jones was playing
Yes, that. It was Ryan Jones. And then you throw Horkoff in there, but, I mean, you look at, like, Taylor Hall and Olmark and Pajarvi, like...
Yeah, every
I don't know why I was thinking about it this morning, but... I kind of flashing back to those Nordiques teams right before they moved to Denver.
Yeah.
Sakic, Sundin, Ricci, Forsberg, you know, like.
Ozilinch.
Yeah. Hold on a second here, guys. Yeah, Adam Foote. Yeah, maybe we may get this together here.
Yeah.
Now, if they can only find Patrick Waugh, they'll be all set.
They're going to have a number one or number two draft pick, most likely, so.
Yeah.
Maybe he's out there.
Well, then the Canucks obviously have. I'm just going down their list right now: Bieksa, Ballard, Tambellini,
Mason,
Tanner
Raymond.
Glass, Kessler, Chris Higgins, Mason Raymond, Victor Oreskovich, who played like eight games for Notre Dame.
Damn.
Yeah. So. He did.
Chris Tanev.
Tanev, they were talking about Tanev last night, about him being out. He's hurt, I guess.
Yeah.
And just saying, you know, and talking about how it was a big loss for them, or big to have him out. And I'm thinking, this guy was playing for RIT last year, and now here they are on Hockey Night in Canada talking about how they need to get him back.
Yes.
Yeah. That's something.
Pretty good leap.
Speaking of
college guys who have made the jump, I saw the Wild play the Lightning on a couple days ago.
On purpose?
On purpose. Well, I was being paid. But not only is Dwayne Roloson still playing in the NHL, and God bless him, former Hobie finalist, but UMass Lowell. The first goal scored by the Lightning, Ryan Malone from Dominic Moore and Mike Lundin. Three college guys, all of whom played in Minnesota at one point in their career. It's like, yeah, good idea to let them leave town.
So what's this, a St. Cloud, Harvard, Maine?
Yeah.
Yeah, see?
And
Lundin no conference is the best. You guys can play together and get along.
Lundin is from a suburb, yeah. And Malone, who is from Pittsburgh, has a house in Minneapolis and lives here in year-round. Or not year-round, but when he's not in the NHL.
I was going to say, if he lived there year-round, he'd be later for more practices than Oshie.
That's true.
And Tampa, we look forward to you, 52 weeks.
That's right.
52 weeks away, boys.
Another college guy, Al Montoya, is back from the dead.
Yeah, I saw him.
He's been playing okay, actually. He's playing. As proclaimed on a podcast earlier this year for my Islanders.
I was going to say, are we calling them your Islanders?
The Canucks just get good and then you dump them.
I've watched the least NHL this year of the last probably 5 years. I just have been less interested.
I've been busy.
Yeah, I've been watching college hockey. Go figure.
Yeah.
Well, now they like put the games on TV and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that helps.
College hockey is on TV.
I figured I better tune in last night to watch the Canucks because I just figured I was
get up to speed before the playoffs start.
Exactly. I figure I better figure out what's going on here. And they lost. Corey Schneider was in goal last night.
Big game Corey, yeah. He was in. Big game Corey. Right, Wisconsin? Right, Michigan State? Oh, too soon?
I wouldn't blame big game Corey as much as I'd blame line change Boyle.
He's got like 25 goals.
I know.
That's unbelievable to me.
I know. So. The other thing I was going to bring up, and this is something you actually brought up to me, Gladdy, was what were we talking about the worst songs ever?
Oh, there's a lot of worst songs ever.
No, I know, but you were saying something about it was
baseball. Oh, what song game would I never, if I could, oh, Sweet Caroline.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, somebody brought that up for some reason.
It was on the, you said you were watching a baseball, it was the Sox and.
No, it was a preseason game, a spring training game in Orlando. The Braves were playing the Red Sox and. Of course, all the Red Sox fans from everywhere that's not Boston were around when they're pink hats. And the stadium, in between innings, entertainment played about five bars of Sweet Caroline, and all the Red Sox fans started to get excited. And this was in Orlando where the Braves train. He played about 5 seconds of Sweet Caroline, and the Red Sox fans started to perk up, and then he caught it right away and played Thank God I'm a Country Boy.
The ultimate.
Yeah.
So. Miami Redhawks are big fans of Sweet Caroline.
And then I'm glad he was telling me the story, and then I opined that Sweet Caroline is among the worst songs ever.
Yeah.
I could never hear that song again.
Does it surprise you that both Miami Redhawks fans and Boston Red Sox fans like Sweet Caroline?
Yeah. Not too much.
No, not really.
What were the other? We brought up some other ones on there.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
Convictors was one.
Get ready to hear that one a lot.
Oh yeah.
Can I offer an opinion here?
Sure.
No.
Because friends of mine in WCHA circles know this, and in fact, now when they hear this song at arenas, they'll actually tweet me and like taunt me with it. But I've long said that when I'm the WCHA commissioner. Which is not far off, by the way. Cotton Eye Joe will be banned from college hockey arenas.
Yes.
And I'm looking in your direction, St. Cloud State and Minnesota State. It's done. It's over. Okay. It's not going to happen anymore.
I Will Survive. That's on my list.
Yes, that was another one.
I'm a big fan of everything from the Colorado College Pep Band.
Wow.
They're good. They travel light.
Let me just say on that topic, how do you not have a school song? I mean, I can see not having a band, but what colleges out there don't have a school song? You know, maybe you don't have a music program. Okay, I understand that, but wow.
What if their song is Sweet Caroline?
You know what they play? This is no lie. Because the two times they've won the Hobie, usually, you know, at the Hobie announcement, they'll announce the name and then they'll play the school song as the guy's coming up to getting a round of applause. They play Rocky Mountain Way by Joe Walsh.
Yeah, that's not good.
That should forfeit any Colorado College players from
being Hobie. Now that I know that, I'll never give them a vote again.
Sorry, future Jaden.
Jaden Schwartz just lost the Hobie.
I don't have a vote right now.
It's true.
I'm just gonna...
That is true.
If you don't play your school song, then, I mean, then you're just saying that the communists are winning.
That's right.
There was another song that we came up with, and I can't remember what it was. Another arena-type song that, I don't know, Sweet Caroline just takes the cake. I
mean, oh, Whoop, There It Is?
No, no.
No, I said Bust a Move by Young MC. I've never
Yes, you did. Song. Yes.
I have a friend who grits his teeth every time Let's Get It Started is played.
Well, the Black Eyed Peas should just be shot into space. I mean,
they are shot into space. They're shot here from space.
Well, can we send them back? They're awful at every turn.
Return to sender?
Yes. Just shoot them right into the sun. Now I'm angry.
That one that married the guy from North Dakota is kind of cute.
No, she's not.
She's a mess.
Fergie, she used to be on the meth.
Oh yeah, I know. I know she's had a lot of problems. she's had a checkered past. That came up when we were discussing her on the Hobie conference call.
Least of which is that she's with the Black Eyed Peas.
There you go.
She was in a commercial recently that was real bad, too. I don't remember the details or what it was for, but I remember thinking it was terrible.
Good advertising.
This one test marketed through the roof.
So whoever you are, consumer product company, find a new spokesperson.
Any other deterioration, fellas?
God, I hate the Black Eyed Peas. I mean, they're just awful.
There it is.
They're terrible. No, I'm sure somebody from North Dakota is going to email me about ripping on the Black Eyed Peas because Fergie's married to the guy from North Dakota.
Is he the actor still?
Yeah. I don't know what he was in, though.
This is what passes for news in the Midwest in the winter, but they spent Christmas in Fargo, and there were, like, Fergie sightings all over Fargo, allegedly.
Like, on purpose, or was there planned?
Yeah, like, with her husband's family or something like that.
Oh, terrific.
Was she looking for meth?
Stop.
Easy. I'm just saying.
Stop.
Ground's too cold to have a lab there.
There's probably a lot of anhydrous ammonia around, though.
That's actually a huge problem in farm country. That
I know
that
it is.
All the ingredients to make meth are readily available in.
All you need is propane, and trust me, I know what you need to make meth.
So does your dentist.
Yeah.
I'm not asking the next question. I'm just trying to.
Chiclets.
All right. Any other deterioration, boys, before we put a bow tie on this lovely piece of work? Happy baseball season, everyone.
If you're coming to St. Paul and you just happen to bring a tank of propane.
Sandbags.
is St. Paul still underwater?
No, the river crested and it's going down now. Almost all the snow's gone, so. This is going to be fun. I mean, no BS. This is going to be. I'm really looking forward to this. This will be a good tournament. The crowds will be good. The atmosphere is going to be good. It's a good hockey town. It's not a football stadium.
That makes one of us.
A lot of good things coming together.
When you say atmosphere, are you talking like the barometric pressure?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
For those, and everyone knows I'm not one of those, but for those people who love the atmosphere and everything, it's almost incomparable. St. Paul can't match what it had in 02.
Yeah.
You know? But I guess we don't have to compare it against itself. You know, we can compare it to the Columbus and Denver and Now, Milwaukee was unique and obviously very, very exciting, but...
But nowhere near St. Paul.
No. What, that situation was unbelievable.
Wait, the situation was there?
Yeah.
Oh.
His name was Tyler. Tyler Hirsch. Wow.
GTL goal. I don't even want to finish.
No, you can just leave that one.
All right.
To wither.
Yeah. But, you know, yeah, that year in St. Paul, I mean, we were probably this close to having to somebody setting the town on fire.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the last year before Inch.
It was.
That was our training camp.
We did a heck of a job.
That's right. We were non-roster when we came in, and we left as all-stars.
Buffalo was our training camp.
Yeah.
Buffalo was our rookie year. We didn't do too bad there either.
Oh, man.
Oh.
And,
and so, let's talk about something else.
And so.
Let's talk about something we remember.
Yeah, no kidding. That was sure great, that game with those teams and the goal that...
A cheerleader falling off the bar. And
yeah.
Thomas Vanek something something.
Something something Thomas Vanek. Cornell. Maybe we should open... Maybe since we're going to be at Campus Pizza, maybe we should offer an open invitation to any Minnesota cheerleaders who want to recreate that moment.
Yes.
Truly one of the great... moments in what?
It was a Wednesday night. It was Wednesday night.
Yes.
Yes, it was.
At some place that no longer exists.
Yes, thoughts and prayers.
Buffalo no longer exists?
Yeah.
I mean, it looked to me like it was on its last legs, but...
Yeah, that downtown was looking...
Are you Chippewa Street?
I don't even think you can say Chippewa anymore, can you?
Oh yes, you can. You can say Chippewa Street on the podcast.
I think you could. I think you have to call it indigenous people or whatever that word is.
Indigenous
people, First Nation Street.
But there was a college that was the Chippewas, and didn't they have to change their name?
No, they're still the Chips.
Michigan. They're still.
Well,
that's
Central Michigan.
Come on, but fire up Chips.
Eastern Michigan had to change its name.
Yeah. There was a Hurons.
They chose, yes. No, or they had to.
If you're the Hurons, couldn't you just say you're named after the lake?
Pretty much.
Then you're the Huron.
Yeah, that works.
That's why they changed Eagles.
I write about the Minnesota Wild 82 games a year, so you're not going to catch me on dumb nicknames.
Wilds.
The Wilds.
I'm getting so much Wilds stuff when I'm out there. Oh, man.
This shirt says does not have the S on it. Can I get it for a discount? See if that flies.
The Wilds scored 2 goals in a game. Does that mean everything's half off?
You get a crunchy
buy one,
taco
get three
Taco
free.
Bell. A crunchy beef taco.
Buy one, get 4 free.
We kid Wild fans because they're terrible.
We kid the team. We don't kid the fans.
No. I'm just saying, Wild fans, if you were going to send an email.
If they were going to send an email, they wouldn't listen and would complain first without hearing our written.
That's been known to happen.
All right. Doubt anything? Shout-outs? Last call? Mentions?
Nah. I'm good.
Frozen week, baby. Here we go.
I'm excited. It's also I'm an accountant and it's close week, so first few days are going to be hell, but the last few days will be great.
Nice,
James. Since you're driving here, there's a Dunkin' Donuts in Wisconsin Dells. That's the closest one to me. If you wanted to pick up a dozen, I'd pay cash.
You wouldn't pay
North
cash.
That often comes for Tim.
Are you kidding?
I'd pay cash or I'd give you vouchers.
Vouchers. EBT.
That's as good as money.
It is.
It's an IOU.
Text me your order, and I'll see what I can do.
All right.
Jess, last call, shout-outs, anything?
Looking forward to all of your arrival. It's going to be a blast.
I'm coming from Michigan on a plane, and I can bring Tim Hortons.
Oh, we're taking it up a notch.
This bidding war is far outside my jurisdiction.
No, you have Tim Hortons, don't you?
Yeah, I'm not bringing on a plane for Jess.
For you? I wasn't going to bring them for Jess either. I was just going to bring them.
Just eat them.
Give them the empty box.
Nice.
Bus, I was with you the first time I ever had a Timbit. Those ones that got FedExed to Albany, remember that?
Yeah, that didn't work very well, did it?
Well, if you're a Michigan State fan, no, but...
it worked out. Ryan Miller did win the Hobie Baker Award, so...
He did win the Hobie.
Then he got booed by North Dakota fans, so...
I thought we weren't mentioning names.
That happened. That's history. That happened on TV.
Good idea. Oh.
It did. It did. I was there. I was standing right there. They were swearing. It was great.
Bus, last call. Shout-outs.
I got stuff to do.
All right. Well, I guess that'll do it. Thanks for listening to the Inch Podcast. Once again, I'd like to thank presenting sponsor, the 2011 NCAA Frozen Four.
Dreams are forged. Character is tested. Teams are united. Champions win here. Watch the crowning of a new NCAA Men's Frozen Four champion April 7th and 9th on ESPN and ESPN2 in high definition. For information, visit ncaa.com/frozen4.
All right, for James V. Dowd, Jess Myers, Mike Adobis, my name is Joe Gladyszewski. Thank you for listening to the Inch Podcast. We will be on the scene in St. Paul for full coverage of the Frozen Four, and that'll do it. Thanks.